We read the headlines almost every day of scandals with big tech companies. Headlines are glimpses of ways that these companies exploit personal data without our knowledge and how those data are used to shape our behavior. Our challenge now is to move past the shock and the revulsion to ask the most important question of our time. Will we be the masters of the information age, or will it master us? Harvard Business School Emerita Professor and bestselling author Shoshana Zuboff writes about this in her new book, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. In it, she reveals what is at stake for our digital future and how we can reclaim control by harnessing the collective power of indignant citizens, journalists, students, artists, scholars, policymakers, and regulators. Again, the name of the book is The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Shoshana Zuboff to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure is mine.
Let us begin with how you define surveillance capitalism.
Surveillance capitalism follows the tradition of capitalism in the following way. It has long been understood that capitalism evolves by taking things that exist outside the marketplace and bringing them inside to the market and subordinating them to the market dynamic. So famously, industrial capitalism claimed nature, something that lives outside of the market. It claimed nature for the marketplace so that it could be reborn as real estate, as land that could be sold and purchased. In this same vein, surveillance capitalism claims something from outside and brings it inside the market, but it does this now with a dark and unexpected twist, because surveillance capitalism claims private human experience for the marketplace, converting it into behavioral data that can be sold and purchased in a new kind of marketplace. And that is the essence of surveillance capitalism. Private human experience is now re-perceived as free raw material for translation into behavioral data, which are then formed into predictions of future behavior. And those predictions are sold to business customers who have an interest in knowing what we will do now, soon, and later.
This was a term that you coined and popularized in 2014. So what led you to want to look at this in this age and this fight?
First of all, why do I call it surveillance capitalism? Because from the start, the folks who discovered this new logic, which began at Google and then migrated to Facebook and throughout the tech sector, and now, by the way, has migrated across the normal economy. We find this in virtually every sector of the economy. But the point is that right from the beginning, they understood that, A, they could make a lot of money predicting human behavior because many business customers wanted to have these predictions. They also understood that if they asked us if they could please take our private human experience for translation into behavioral data and these new prediction products, if they asked us in a meaningful way, we would say no. And so from the beginning, they understood that they had to invent the methods and the mechanisms that were specifically engineered to keep us in ignorance, the social relations of the one-way mirror. So these are the social relations of surveillance, where they get to see us, we don't get to see them. They have a tremendous amount of knowledge about us, but that knowledge is not used for us. It's not used on our behalf. So what we see forming here, you know, we're entering the 21st century with this whole commercial domain, this whole market domain on the internet and increasingly off the internet, which is based on extreme inequalities of knowledge. And extreme inequalities of knowledge mean extreme inequalities of power. So while we've been preoccupied, and rightly so, with the scourge of economic inequality that has transformed and challenged many of our societies, what we see now in the 21st century is that economic inequality is one dimension of inequality alongside a wholly new axis of social inequality, where these private companies get to know more than we do and have more power than we do to shape and influence behavior for commercial gain. This is a very unstable and unhealthy predicament for us as we enter the 21st century, as we're trying to figure out ways to make our societies more equal and more inclusive, instead in these very hidden ways that are designed to be impossible to detect, we're actually creating less equal societies with more danger embedded in these new inequalities.
Shoshana Zuboff is the Charles Edward Wilson Professor Emerita at Harvard Business School and the author of In the Age of the Smart Machine and the Support Economy. The new book is The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. This idea that you mentioned a moment ago of this one-way mirror, why do you believe that we as a culture, as a society, as a people allowed that?
There are many, many good reasons for this. Let's look at the top three. The top three, beginning with what we've already mentioned, these things are designed to be hidden. The massive amount of capital, surveillance capital, that has been amassed in the last two decades, these capital are entirely trained on developing these systems in ways that are hidden. So we've had revelations about this just in the last few days. We learned that Nest thermostats, Nest, of course, owned by Google, have a microphone buried in them, and they never told anybody. And some folks just figured that out, and All of a sudden Google is, oh, sorry, yeah, we meant to tell you that. And then we found out Facebook had planned to use its application on the Android platform to spy on phone users and to track their locations and a bunch of other information. And then the Wall Street Journal breaks a story that just about every app that you're giving sensitive information to about your diet, your exercise, your health, your family, your emotions, your menstrual periods, these apps are automatically shunting information to Facebook. So I'm recounting these just recent examples because each one of these is designed to be hidden. And we're only finding out about them by accident.
I want to add one more that I just read about, and I think it plays right into it, that several airlines had cameras in the backs of seats.
Okay.
Did you hear about that?
No, I just read about that.
No. But again, hidden, right? I mean, they're not telling you that this is the case.
They're not telling you, yeah. And then the question is, what are they doing with the information they're collecting with those cameras? Those are the supply chains that we need to track. And the way I summarize all of this, whether it's the Android thing, the apps that are shunting data, the microphone in the thermostat, the big headline here that everyone needs to understand is that under this new dominant regime of surveillance capitalism, every product that's got the word smart in front of it, every service that's got the word personalized in front of it, just about every internet-enabled thing that you engage with, including the apps, including the phone, including online, including the smart dishwasher, the smart TV in your kitchen, in your living room, all of these things now need to be reconceptualized as supply chain interfaces. These are the interfaces from which they are grabbing our experience, translating it into behavioral data that can be computed, computing it into predictions, and selling it in these new markets that trade exclusively in the futures of human behavior, behavioral futures. So it looks like, you know, there's all this range of products and services, and isn't this cool? But in fact, behind the facade is actually one activity. And that's increasingly complex, ubiquitous supply chains that are hurtling behavioral data to hubs where they are computed and translated into predictions and sold in these marketplaces. And by the way, online targeted advertising was the first marketplace like this, because you only have to zoom out a little bit to see that what those online advertisers are doing are paying for a prediction of our behavior. In this case, a prediction of what ads we're likely to click on. But now we have insurers who are paying for predictions of how we're going to drive and how we're going to eat and how we're going to exercise. People in the finance industry paying for predictions. People in the health industry paying for predictions. And all these behavioral data are being scooped up in a complex new ecosystem where there are some businesses that just specialize in grabbing the data. Others specialize in computing it. Others are shunting it to the Facebooks and the Googles for their immense computational capabilities. And of course, the markets that they host. So this is a new way to make sense of this, you know, the daily march of scandals that we read about and these crazy things like cameras in the back of the seat. All of this starts to make sense. It seems like we're just, you know, we've got one scandal after another and one fire to put out after another. And you end up feeling like, you know, how long can I keep my finger in this dike? But actually, if you step back from that and realize this is a new economic logic of surveillance capitalism, it's unprecedented, which is another reason why they got away with it, because we weren't prepared for this phenomenon. It's not what we expected from the digital. We expected empowerment. We expected democratization. Instead, we found a new economic logic that has taken hold and dominates this space, that is actually making us less powerful because it actually is an assault on our autonomy as individuals. And it's making us less democratic because it's creating a society with these huge asymmetries, these huge new social inequalities of knowledge, which is a direct assault on the very foundations of a democratic society. So we're getting just the opposite. But if we start to understand, hey, every one of these crazy examples that we hear about every day is actually just a normal expression of this new economic logic. And once we understand the economic imperatives that drive these companies, each one of these things becomes totally understandable and even, dare I say it, totally predictable. And then we say, okay, we see what the deal is. What we've got to do is come together as citizens of democratic societies, and we have to put a stop to this economic logic because it's illegitimate, because it is unproductive, because it is parasitic, and because it is a threat to democracy, both at the level of individual sovereignty as well as at the level of our whole institutional framework and the new inequalities that it introduces.
So if we are going to fight, as the subtitle of your book suggests, the fight for a human nature at the new frontier of power, if we are going to fight, at some point, this is going to have to come down ultimately to us coexisting and trusting technology once it is improved. Is that true?
Well, if we're going to fight, we're going to win this fight with law. And so the way I see it, we've got three key pieces here for this fight. The first is that we need to understand ourselves in a new way. They have called us users. Users, both in the sense of people who are addicted.
Right.
Because, by the way, Joe, you know, I said there are three big reasons how they've gotten away with it. We talked about ignorance. We talked about the fact that this stuff is unprecedented.
Right.
And also the third, which is that it's impossible to just get through daily life in an effective way anymore without also marching through the same spaces that are these channels for surveillance capitalist supply chains. So we're pretty much trapped now in a world of no exit where the alternatives are really few and far between. So a lot of us are participating in this, you know, gritting our teeth, knowing that we're looking for something else and it doesn't exist. So let's look at the solutions. Number one, we are not just users. We are human beings, all members of a new information civilization, and we have vested social, political, psychological, as well as economic interests in how the digital future pans out for us, how technology is commanded into action by economics and by democracy. And what's happening right now is intolerable. We're forced to make a choice between participation and giving our experience to this parasitic economic logic. And that's an intolerable and illegitimate choice. And it's perfectly possible for us to imagine the digital without surveillance capitalism. It's impossible to imagine surveillance capitalism without the digital. So these are two separate domains. So now, as citizens, we have to discover these new interests that bind us together, coming together in new forms of collective action. You know, a century ago, we developed trade unions and the right to strike and collective bargaining. Those were the new institutions of collective action that helped us fight industrial capitalism. We need similar new forms of collective action for the challenges that we face today. They won't be what we figured out 100 years ago, but they will reflect today's shared social and political and psychological and economic interests. And then with a sea change in our public awareness and public opinion, which I think is already underway, we're talking about it on your radio show, with that sea change, we have to demand from our elected officials that these issues become a new focus of law and regulation. Is ultimately, it is going to be democratic oversight and law that creates the space for a second part of the solution, which is new kinds of competitors. We need a whole new ecosystem of businesses that, together with new forms of citizen action, new businesses that want to plant themselves in the connected space, in the networked space, but to do business differently, to do business the way we once imagined it in the digital world, that would be data for us, that would enhance our lives, enhance our health, enhance our security, enhance our commercial activity, that would be for us, not just about us, not exploiting us, not extracting from us, but actually serving us with the real products and kinds of services that we need. And the businesses that align together and form an alternative ecosystem for us, those businesses literally have the opportunity to have every person on planet Earth as their customer. Because no one, when they find out about surveillance capitalism, when they read about it or learn about it, nobody wants to be entangled in this stuff. Everyone rejects it. And yet, as you say, we keep doing it largely because either we're ignorant or because we have no choice.
I want to end on a positive note, but I have to say, as you were saying, of putting pressure on our elected officials, I think anyone who has watched the hearings of any Senate or House committee with a leader from Google or Facebook, and I realize this is somewhat anecdotal, but is horrified by the lack of knowledge that those political leaders have on these very important topics. And I just wonder, assuming these companies aren't going to self-regulate, of then how you inform the leaders, and I understand part of the democracy is to change that, but of how you do that and make that part of the discussion and one of the selling points in changing the face of those committees.
Yes, of course. And we all share this feeling with you. Watching those hearings was appalling, and it was disturbing to see certainly the congressional hearings here in the States. It was appalling to see how little they understood about the businesses that they were trying to question. But here's the perspective that I think we need. First of all, I know it can feel frustrating and that we feel impatient, but we're talking about the work not of weeks or months or possibly even years. You know, this is the work of the next decade, first of all. If we had been having a discussion in 1898 about the excesses of industrial capitalism, the fact that there are, you know, children working in factories, the unsafe working conditions, the violence toward people trying to organize, the horrible, degrading pay, the fact that people were forced to work 16, 70-hour weeks. If we were having that discussion in 1898, the height of the Gilded Age, you know, we would feel pretty hopeless. And yet, citizens did mobilize. Leaders were activated. Courts were pressured. And ultimately, we saw the legislation and the regulation that was required to tame those destructive excesses of a raw capitalism, a raw industrial capitalism. I think we have to look at it this way. This is our work now, to activate our democracy in a way that will build a healthy, inclusive, prosperous road to the digital future. That's not the road that we're on now, but it's a road that we can be on. Our societies have experience in requiring, demanding that our democratic institutions address the excesses of capitalism and tether it to the principles of democracy and the needs of citizens in a democratic society. We've done that before, and we can do that again. These capabilities, these democratic capabilities, have been asleep now for the past couple of decades, but it's time for them to be awoken. It's not a quick work, but it's big and important work, and history suggests to me that this is a very doable work. This is something that we can accomplish, we've accomplished before. So I'm very optimistic about this. And as I go around the world speaking with people, I see so many people getting activated now, beginning to understand, getting a deeper perception of what's going on, and realizing that it is intolerable and kind of, you know, feeling the outrage, if you will. And I think that is a very positive development, and ultimately this will lead to change.
Harvard Business School Emerita Professor and bestselling author Shoshana Zuboff's new book is The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, The Fight for a Human Future at the New Frontier of Power. The book is published by Public Affairs. Thank you so much for the wonderful discussion. I appreciate you being part of it.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's great to talk to your audience. I appreciate it, too.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is The Age of Surveillance Capitalism. The book is published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.